Hey there, how you doing? Welcome. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, The Money Show. I'm your money co-host, James Parker. If you got a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, this is the show for you. You can call my buddy across the table from me here, Gregory. He is a financial advisor during the day, answers your questions on this radio show, Monday through Friday at 7, Saturdays 10 to 1.
I appreciate you joining us, hanging in there with us. You know, I'm sure you have other things to do, like sewing your masks and cleaning out closets, and, you know, with your extra time. Or what is it? Binging Ozark. And the our kids tell us about this show, Outer Banks. You heard of that on Netflix?
I've only seen the commercials as I'm scrolling through the menu.
It's a treasure hunt, it turns out.
Is it okay? It looks like it's for kids.
I watched 3 episodes. So I was, look, being 21-year-olds tell me about it. I'm like, you know, I don't know. Have you seen Ozark? I respond, have you seen Ozark? Mm-hmm. But I said, okay, I'll give it an episode. And it was pretty good. There was another show I saw. They're listening to Winning That Life here. I'm Gregory Ricks. That's James Parker. You hear on the other mic there. We saw Outlander, and then they previewed this other show, and it just looked like a druggy show. You know, just the people doing drugs. So I just didn't think that was a good show to preview after Outlander, the season finale of that. So I lasted about 5 minutes. Okay, moving on. But I guess that's your chance.
Was that the New World Tour with Willie Nelson? The druggy show, is that what that was?
No, it was not.
Okay, I'm reporting this like I care about other people, but really I'm only doing this for myself. So those of you who
you're cracking me up.
Well, this is true, though. Those of you and me who qualified for an economic stimulus payment.
I'm just saying, that's so odd of you.
Right. I'm such a giving person. That's what they say about Parker. He's a giver. So I didn't make too much money to not get a check. But I do pay into the tax system. So the IRS hadn't direct deposited a refund in my account in years. And when I went to check on it with the get my payment tool, nope, they didn't have my bank account information. So I wasn't going to get a direct deposit. They did fix the tool and let me put in my information, but I tried and that didn't work either. So I'm just like going to sit back. Hey, maybe I'll get my check, whatever. If not, it'll come out in the wash when I do next year's taxes. Well, I find out I'm not getting a paper check, and neither are my other cohorts in this one. 4 million payments are being mailed out this week on prepaid cards. Those little like debit cards, cash cards.
And what's being sent out? The EIP?
The economic impact payment is the technical government term for it, but my stimulus check. So I didn't get it.
So what is it? Well, it's EIPs. Can we count it? IPs? Would that be right? IPs?
Well, if it was German, it'd be IPs.
IPs. Well, it could be IPs.
But it's American. It's IPs.
It's
EIPs.
We're just trying to shorten it even more, EIPs.
What are the cool kids calling it? Okay, so 4 million
money.
These little guys are going to go out. And this is one of the concerns that they've had because of it was expressed last month as the underbanked. Did you hear that term, underbanked? What good is
it? No, that's new to me.
What good does it do if you send a $1,200 check to someone that doesn't have a bank account? They can't go cash it or deposit it or use it. They have to go take it to a check cashing place, and they're going to get gouged for like 4% interest or whatever, and it's a whole nother step, and that money's going to go somewhere.
Yeah, check cashing company.
Yes.
Yeah, those are real nice, friendly places, huh?
So this is sort of the compromise that they've used so they can get around that, these little debit cards.
Interesting.
So that's what we're looking for, and we're still looking for that. 15 days after it gets mailed this week, they're going to do the follow-up letter, so look for that in your mail.
But that takes me back to M-Pesa, which, remember, that was actually, that software was created in Europe, I think Great Britain, but it's became super popular in Africa.
It's a digital currency. Yeah,
much like digital currency. And they've just got to deposit their money, and they have, you know, places there. Basically, it's the telecom that they deposit money at, and that's how they exchange and pay things, and even on payments and due deals. We covered it a few years ago on the show. And I was just wondering, when they do the deposit, say at the telecom desk, and they have them everywhere. And I know it's only pennies on the transaction that they make, but that's what, remember the CEO? He said, oh, those pennies add up quite a bit. So I wonder if they have like a fee, like on the cash checking, cash.
I think M-Pesa was
check
like
cashing thing.
Wasn't M-Pesa like 1%?
Yeah, that I just don't recall. But it's not necessarily about that. It's about the pennies that are adding up and the convenience. But the reason that became so popular, because poor people didn't have banking, and rural communities over there don't have any financial access, and M-Pesa changed everything.
They would definitely count as the underbanked, those people. IRS has said they've already issued 140 million economic impact payments through their direct deposit system.
You see, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to. Okay. I'm just going back to Venmo. Why wouldn't Venmo work for them? Because I don't think I get a fee on Venmo, and I opened the Venmo account with nothing.
No, Gregory.
And I have a good bit of money in it, but I've not connected it to any bank account there. But I don't know why why something like that hasn't evolved here for them. Just say, give us your Venmo account, we'll send you the IPs.
See, the thing is they would actually have to get everybody's Venmo information. Yeah, you have to get everybody's email. Does everybody have an email? Does everybody have a phone that can work Venmo? See, M-Pesa works because in those poor countries, it even works on those little flip phones.
Well, right.
My grandparents flip phones. Still use. My wife's grandparents.
You're not the only one with parents or grandparents that still use flip phones.
Right. Yeah. So prepaid cards get around even the flip phone people and people that don't have smartphones. So
yeah, that's pretty rare around here, though. Okay,
super rare.
Back to what you were covering.
Well, I'm just waiting on my prepaid credit card now. Meanwhile, they are making provisions for another stimulus payment, but that seems dead in arrival. What passed on Friday, the Senate didn't even bother with it today. So I think they're just going to scrap all that, and we can just forget that whole line of legislation to begin with.
Well, that is not necessarily out the norm. That happens. They all pass bill, and then it goes up to the Senate, and it sets around for a while, or they get committees to go, well, we got to look at this. We're going to rewrite this and fix it and then send it back to you if we approve it up here. But this isn't some like, oh, we're being a bunch of A's and we're not even going to look at it. Well, they aren't looking at it. And the Dems might think that, the House might think that, but that's not unusual that we had something pass at the end of the year that sat around for a long time. What was the big change?
What, the Secure Act?
Yeah, it was in the Secure Act, and we had talked about it. When's it going to ever pass? It was the RMD thing getting pushed to 72, and we knew about it for months. We had talked about this is out there. The House has passed it back, months before. And we said, at some point it's going to get in. Looked at, and it did at the end of the year. So maybe some of this stuff gets looked at on the next $4 or $5 trillion bill they want to pass.
Yeah, we'll let you know if it gets put back on somebody's wagon, but it got kicked off today. We also had an announcement from Steven Mnuchin speaking on behalf of the Small Business Administration. They have a deadline. Today it was the last day for you to give back your gigantic multi-million-dollar PPP loan if you're a huge publicly traded company. Now, this is, you heard about Shake Shack and the Roost Chris and a couple other big guys already returned some of their money. The SBA is having a problem, though. Their complaint is these public companies have cash value in the form of shares, access to capital markets where they can buy and, issue bonds, corporate bonds or whatever. Then why'd you let them have the money in the first place, Greg?
Well, what's going to happen is remember, we talked about it on the Saturday show that we do. And Jude Heath, CPA, was with us. And there's a certification process. They might not certify, meaning they may not make it forgivable. That's part of the certification, that it's a forgivable loan. So then they do have to pay it back with interest then.
Well, if they're paying it back, I really don't mind if a big company takes one of these loans. They're not taking taxpayer money. They're actually putting money back in
They get short-term use, but if it's not forgivable.
Well, here's the problem. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been returned, but CNBC dug into this. According to this Forbes article, they said there's hundreds of companies still keeping the money that fit this description. And there's nothing written in the law that talks about anything illegal or how they prosecute them or what the crime is or what the sentence is. What are you going to charge them in court with? Following the rules?
Remember, the legislators basically said, it wasn't meant for them. What you should have said no publicly traded companies then.
Yes, and that's one of the defenses from the companies is we just followed your rules that you gave us.
They didn't do anything wrong, and of course, the Treasury, I believe is the right department there, has not released a list, and I guess they will one day, or maybe not.
Never know. All right, what you got there, Gregory?
The adjustment in 2020 was considered minimal. This is Social Security increase.
The cost of living adjustment?
Yeah, that adjustment in 2020 was minimal at 1.6% this year, down from 2.8 in 2019. COLAs have averaged 1.4% over the past decade, down from an average of 3% it was between 2000 and 2009. In 2020, the adjustment for Social Security increase for inflation was 1.6%, well below the average between 2000 and 2009 that was about 3%. Here's the problem. Social Security's cost of living adjustment is linked to the consumer price index for urban workers. There's another subset of CPI known as CPIE, which tracks elderly spending. The difference is primarily in healthcare and housing. Those expenses, including Medicare premiums and homeowners insurance, grow rapidly year over year, but benefit adjustments don't reflect that growth. Now, the coronavirus could deepen the divide, especially as medical expenses drop in some areas, such as elective surgeries. And remember, we talked about that. Right. That accounted for 50% of the GDP drop, almost 50%. But once again, such as elective surgeries, but increase in others, including care for COVID-19 patients, older people are disproportionately affected by COVID-19 crisis, often due to the underlying medical conditions. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as other leading figures, have urged older Americans to stay home and stay away from others because you're higher risk to contracting the virus. Now, annual out-of-pocket expenses for prescription drugs were $1,102 in January 2000 and $3,875.76 in January of 2020. Gosh, what a change that is from 2000 to 2020. A 252% increase in Medicare Part B premiums jumped 218% during the same time period, and home heating oil grew 172% during that period. Even the price of oranges grew more than double, from 61 cents in 2000 to $1.34 in 2020, a 120% increase. A retiree in 2000 with an average benefit of $816 a month would have $1,246 in 2020, but would need $380 more a month just to maintain the same level of buying power that he or she had in 2000. In total, and here you go, James, Social Security benefits have lost 30% of their buying power since 2000. And there's still much uncertainty as to what will happen in the coming months in light of the pandemic. In some cases, consumer prices are rising, such as for groceries and meat, and more consumers cook at home and factories are shuttered, while in other scenarios, cost of goods and services are declining, such as with insurance and airfare. Might be zero this year. We don't know, but.
Oh,
it's already at 1.6 for 2021. So what's it going to be in 2021?
Who wrote that article? Where'd that come from?
It's a Wall Street article. It's going to be up on my blog tomorrow.
Love it. This is stuff we should talk about once a month.
Alexandra Melito, and it'll be on the news blog at gregoryricks.com tomorrow.
That's one of the biggest underreported stories of our lifetime, is the debacle that Social Security is turning into in front of our face while we're just being lied to about it. You mean to tell me?
Oh, I know. I was stunned at the stats from 2000 to 2020.
You know, I wasn't stunned. I was just happy to hear other people admit it in public. You and I have known that the real thing that they're doing with Social Security is not cutting the check. The check's going up every year, but they're inflating the currency behind it. And when you throw on another $4 trillion, that's just going to be magically added to the currency pool. You're going to exacerbate this situation. And you can fast forward in 10 years. You're going to be able to buy 50% of what that check got you in the year 2000.
Well, you know, and those that have been receiving Social Security for years and also have Medicare Part B premiums, they know what's happening is that increase gets absorbed by the Medicare premium, which is capped to their increase. So they really never feel an increase, yet it's being devalued.
Right.
Over 30%. And typically, and we talked about this on one of the recent shows as well, is the $1 trillion we're used to seeing of budget deficit. Well, it's not really been a trillion as an average under that, but we were expecting a trillion budget deficit this year, but it's going to be already projected as of right now, $3.5 trillion deficit for this fiscal year that ends in September. That's all I got. It's just, but it's on top of that inflation. It's
there's certain
more coming, taxes right. Going up.
Dan Metairie, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Dan?
Your favorite caller.
Hey, Dan. I didn't know it was that Dan. What's up? What's up today?
That Dan. Listen, today I heard something on the radio about a loan up to $2 million. Do you know anything about that one? I think it's
I know where I've heard it in one of our stories that we already covered on the show today. $2 million is the cutoff for when they go back and they audit all the people who got the PPP money.
Yeah.
If you got a loan that is smaller than $2 million, you're not going to be subjected to an audit, you know, where they go try and find out if some of these companies had easier access to capital markets or other ways they could have borrowed money.
Well, this was a guy from Gulf Coast, and he was talking about this was supposedly something new.
They just mentioned
that, and today's the first day they're putting out the loan forgiveness forms, and you can start getting them today, and there will be a loan up to $2 million.
I think what they're referring to is some of the rules tweaked on the PPP loans that they've already, that's been out there for a month now or so out there. I just think
that it might be just new, same loans, new forms, huh?
Yeah, and because there is stuff that has to be done on the back end, but they basically came in and tweaked some of the rules to simplify this for the smaller accounts. Call it, I think it's safe harbor rules, they kind of defined it as on that. I've not heard of any new loan program, and they've not done any new legislation like either.
The way he talked about it, it sounded like it was a new loan.
No,
I'll give them a call.
New information.
They got the information about it. I'll give them a call and see what they said and give you a call back tomorrow.
All right.
Awesome. Let us know. Thanks
Okay, pal. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joe in Gulfport, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Joe?
Yes, sir. I'm thinking about applying for my Social Security early. I'm 61. I'll be 62 next year. And I would like to apply those payments towards principal on an existing mortgage so I can reduce the maturity rate, the maturity date of the loan. So I could add like $900+ every month to a principal payment. And I was wondering if that was actually allowed.
Once you turn it on and take the money net of taxes, because it is taxable money subject to income, assuming that's not your only money is why I say that. You can do whatever you want with it once you receive it into your account. Now, whether that's the best thing for you, I don't know, because do you have other income?
Yeah, I'm self-employed. I've had my own business since 1986. So I'm going to continue to work. Retirement is not something that I'm interested in. So I'll just continue to work.
And but you do
know there's a limit.
One day unless you die before, you will retire. You're going to reach a point where you're not going to work at some point in life, unless you die on the job. You know, some people say, oh, they'll just, you know, roll me out when I die. Yeah. The other part, so what kind of income do you have?
Well, I own my business, so, you know, I pay myself out of the business. So I do a 1099. My accountants handle all of that. So,
okay. But Social Security is going to be taxed. So if your checks say $900, that's not what you're going to net, because it's going to be taxes on it. So it could be 50% inclusive or 85% inclusive. You probably have more income than it would be at zero. Just so you may not have all that. And you do know you're taking somewhere in the neighborhood of a 35% reduction forever by turning it on at age 62. And I'm just pointing these
up by the time I've heard some, you know, if you start now, there's a certain increase every year. At some point it catches up.
No, there's no catch up. You get the COLA increases. That's what we were talking about a little bit earlier. The CPIE, which it's tied to, and for 2020, its increase was 1.6%. We're thinking it might even be zero increase next year because of what's going on. So it's not just, the only way it's increasing is because of the CPIE index there. So you're not making up something because you started, or getting rewarded later because you started it early. You've locked in a permanent reduction, and your full retirement benefit is based on your FRA, which would be, I probably guess, would be age 67 or 66 and a 64. Few months.
I mean, my maximum retirement age monies were, according to the paperwork, was around $1,400. But I would like to get out from under a mortgage, and if I apply, you know, this towards principal payments, it knocks an enormous amount off of the mortgage.
It are you married?
Paid off in 8 years.
Are you married?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Happily.
When is she turning on Social Security?
She's 11 years younger than me.
Mm. So her check's going to be bigger than yours?
I would think so, yes. And she had a question about that as well. If I turn mine on early and something happens to me, those funds go away, I think.
What's her occupation?
She is a speech pathologist. She works for our local city schools.
Uh-oh. Is she a public employee?
Public meaning she works for
does she
our
pay into
county.
Social Security?
Yes, she does.
Is she part of the state retirement program?
Yes, sir.
So she does not participate in Social Security. That's not deducted from her check if she's with lasers. So she's not even getting that benefit. So it's not a point of leaving it for her in that case, because that's another consideration. Then if that's not a factor that you're not worried about this check being part of your retirement later, because you're not factoring in that, and this helps you with the mortgage, might well be adjustable. Justifiable reason to turn it on if it
because
helps
the,
you make that go away.
In business, the property and business itself, my property has value, my own property, and my business itself has its own value. So if I want to stop, you know, or retire, which I doubt that's going to happen, then I can sell both of those for, you know, a particular amount.
Okay.
My goal is, you know, the quicker you get out from underneath. And this would be my last debt. I have no other debt other than the mortgage.
Yeah, then you'd be saving that money afterwards. Okay.
Yes, sir.
I think we've worked through a lot of stuff. I'd say, you know, from your viewpoint, it might well be justifiable. Spouse receiving it if you die before her is not a factor, because she's not eligible to receive it if she's not participated in Social Security through her job. So, and you still have time to think it through. And during that first year, you could change your mind and pay it back as well. So,
all right. Hey,
thanks
you,
for the call, Joe.
Thank you for the call.
Third one, our Powell talk, huh?
Well, I didn't think you were going to lean on the side of maybe he should take it now, but you kind of talked me into it. You know what? Maybe you should turn it on at 62 and knock that out. And it kind of hinges on the spouse.
The spouse was the big changer right at that point there.
Nope.
That, you know, I'm still ambivalent of it, but that's what he's looking to do. And he's got a purpose for it. And he's saying, well, you know, I'm not needing it for retirement or anything. I need to pay off this debt. I want to be debt free. Okay.
Right.
He's not. Remember, it's not always about waiting as long as you can. There's different things you have to look at. It's a real simple rule. And in a vacuum, you could say, yes, you should wait, but we're not in a vacuum. So we have to look at all these different scenarios. And there's times where you might turn it on before FRA and you might not wait to 70. And we know more than half the people turn it on at age 62 anyhow.
Which is a scary number.
Well, that's because half the people don't have retirement too. That might be a tie-in there is.
I want my money now. I think is more the mentality behind that. But his answer was great when you asked, you know, yeah, spouse, are you married? Yes, happily. That's not always the case. I've been pulling up a bunch of highlights because we're going to go through a bunch of highlights for our 10th anniversary next month.
And she's not having a problem because she's like, yeah, might as well get it now and use it because I'm not getting it when you die.
Right.
And he's older than her, so.
Well, when you ask that question, though, we don't always get such a loving, heartwarming answer. We have a guy a few years ago, George in Biloxi, you asked him the same question. This is just a little 7-second flashback, guys.
Are you married?
I am right now, yeah.
Okay, we won't ask any more questions.
See, it's not always the easy question to answer. I just happen to have
that. I remember that. He's like, I don't know. Right now I am.
Didn't seem to be a fanatic about it, though. All right. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, start your search with my buddy Gregory. Gregory Rick Stommer, GregoryRicks.com. Go to Greg.
Now you stumbled. Right. I did earlier.
And more coronavirus information, GregoryRicks.com/coronavirus. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.